This is Radio Guy Reflection.
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 I'm living on the air in Cincinnati.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Here is a complete disc jockey show with all the modern pace of today's exciting radio.
So, you guys hear anything good on the radio lately?
On November the 2nd, 1920, the first radio station, KDKA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, signed on the air. Over the years, radio has changed from radio dramas and live performances to the age of the disc jockey. From the man many believe popularized the term rock and roll, Alan Freed, and legendary radio personalities like Wolfman Jack, Dick Clark, Charlie Tuna, Don Imus, and the men who made talk radio what it is today, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck. Hi, I'm Dave Denton. I'm a radio guy, and even went by that name on the air in Missouri. I'm a radio veteran who started spinning records in 1974 and have seen the industry change from 45s to LPs, carded music, CDs, and now music on hard drives. In this podcast, we'll take a look back not only at my career, but other men and women who have worked in radio entertaining you. This is Radio Guy Reflections. Radio Guy Reflections is brought to you by daysvoiceworks.com. Remember, when you spell works, it's W-O-R-X. Check out radio air checks, commercial production, and what others have to say about daysvoiceworks.com. Spell works, W-O-R-X, and let Dave's voice work for you. Past editions of Radio Guy Reflections have included an owner and operator of a radio station in Thailand who was part of radio history when he was on the pirate radio ships in Great Britain. We've also had an owner-operator in Western Canada, a talk show host in Richmond, Virginia, and we've also had a program director, talk show host in Salt Lake City, and a member of the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. That's just some of the guests we've had on Radio Guy Reflections, and past editions are available on many of these same platforms that you're listening to Radio Guy Reflections. Today we are joined by a good friend of mine and who did mornings with me at WTPR in Paris, Tennessee. I won't tell you when because we're both getting older. And I was the program director, he was the news director, and I'm not just trying to butter him up, but he was just one of the best newsmen I ever worked with. After radio, he became a reporter for his hometown newspaper, the Paris Post-Intelligencer. Let's say hi and welcome to Radio Guy Reflections to my good friend, Ken Walker. Hey, Ken.
Hey, hello, David. Do have to point out right off the bat here, you do know that works is not spelled with an X, right?
Well, I spell it that way. But, you know, that's why we have spell check, right?
Yeah, I had to notice that because part of my job now at the newspaper here in Paris is to be copy editor.
Ooh.
So I'm catching things like that all the time. So
well,
I'm afraid I've become a little bit anal about, grammar and spelling and things like that.
When my wife was working for Utah State University, she was very much involved in some of the commencement exercises. And, you know, those big programs that they put out at commencement exercises for all the graduates? She would have to proofread those three or four times. And she was always finding something. Every time she'd go through it, find something different. So,
yeah
she'll like to know that you're doing that kind of thing. And by the way, I might be able to speak the English language, but writing it, no, that's not one of my forays. And by the way, I am buttering up because I really do think you were one of the best news people I ever worked with, Ken.
That is no joke, man.
So
I appreciate that. And I wound up staying in it for years. You know,
yeah, you have.
And either medium. And, I guess that's what I was meant to do.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of fun discussing that. Let's talk a little bit why and how you got started in news. And, you know, I know you had to have that kind of that idea when you were graduating from Henry County High School.
Well, actually, when I was in college, in high school and in college, I was leaning towards a sports career.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously really loved sports always and got involved in sports information when I was at college at Murray State University. Go Racers, by the way, mm-hmm. at the time we're taping this, they're in the NCAA basketball tournament. That's what I thought I was going to do. When I went to work at the University of Kansas for a while, I figured out that that really wasn't what I wanted to do. Wanted to do something. It seemed a little frothy and flighty to me to be just worried about doing PR for athletes, mm-hmm. you know. So that kind of steered me back towards doing something a little more meaningful, maybe. And in news, you can do that. You can make a difference. What I found out in doing news over the years, especially at the newspaper, is that what you write matters to people. You know, that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing sometimes. But it does matter. So that's kind of why I got steered towards the news angle.
And by the way, before we get too much into this, we got to admit that my cousin, Kevin Bowie, and Brenda Bowie, and my sister, Judy Denton, all live in Paris right now. And that's how we got connected on Facebook again, because Kevin was connected to you on that. And I'm so glad that I could get back in touch with you again.
Oh, sure.
On Facebook. Yeah. And
Kevin's my best friend since elementary school.
Yeah, you used to play Lost in Space together. Is that correct?
We used to watch it. We used to watch it every afternoon.
Yeah, I remember
when they were in reruns. Yeah.
So when you went to Murray State, Go Racers once again, you studied more of the publicity end of sports how to do that and maybe being an SID or something like that. Is that what you were looking to do?
That's what my goal was. I was hoping to become an SID somewhere. And then while I was at Kansas, which was a big time, you know, top level athletic program, I just kind of saw what the job would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't for me. You know, lots of people are really good at it and enjoy, you know, pumping up the athletes and writing nothing but good things about them. I wanted to be a little more objective about things, mm-hmm. I think. So that's, to do that, you become a news reporter. So,
you know, and I was thinking about this over the last 24 hours. I can't remember if Kevin introduced us when I had a job opening at WTPR or if you came in and made an appointment. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I think you were working there already when I got the job.
Uh-huh.
And Kevin, if I remember right, Kevin is the one who told me about the opening.
Yeah. And I'm sure he'll take all the credit in the world for it.
Well, yeah, that would follow the form. We've come to know over decades.
Well, the good
thing I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy morning shift, but I enjoyed.
No, you did not. So I guess for about a year or so that you and I were doing this morning show together, I concentrated more on the announcing end. Like I said, I was the program director and you were the next news director. But the way things were set up, you could do your newscast right next to your typewriter. I mean, we had typewriters then, not word processors or computers.
Yes.
And so there was a big room in between us. But the rapport that you and I came to together, I thought, was really good. And I thought the community of Paris really embraced us for that year or so that we worked together. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we had an opportunity to you know, speak as normal human beings after my newscast was over and we got to actually talk.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and I always thought, I always thought one of the best things that we ever did was during the baseball season. Of course, we're both big St. Louis Cardinal baseball fans and we would have a lot of fun with the Chicago Cubs and their broadcast team, the broadcast team of Harry Carey and Steve Stone. Now, I'm sure a lot of people listen to this know that Harry Carey, one of the best, but he had a very distinctive voice, and sometimes he sounded like he was sloshed to the gills.
They probably did some day drinking.
Oh, I'm sure
they were
did.
Doing all day games still at Wrigley Field. Yeah.
But we had so much fun because you would do this really, I don't know if you've done Harry Carey in a while, but.
Oh, no.
You,
no.
but you.
Lots
you,
of people do it better than me.
Yeah. So. You would do the Harry Carey impression, and then I would come in and kind of do a Steve Stone impression. And my whole impression was, that's right, Harry. That's right. Because that's all they ever did, you know. Oh. Yeah. I mean, Steve Stone went on to, become a really good color analyst. But when he was with Harry Carey, it was just like.
And you got to remember, this is the time period when the Cubs were really getting popular around the country because their station had just gone to a super station format, WGN. So people were able to see almost every Cub game now on that satellite station, the super station, on their cable systems.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And when they started winning big in 1984, which is the year we're talking about, that's the year that I went to work at the radio station there in Paris. They won their division that year. So they were becoming really popular and getting fans. So Harry was becoming really well known nationwide for the first time. So everybody started doing the, well, that's baseball. Well,
that's right, Harry.
That kind of thing.
But I know that, you know.
Yeah, Stoney was funny because Stoney had such a flat delivery. You know, he would say, well, Rick Sutcliffe is a fine young pitcher. You know, everything was exactly straightforward. And
Well, he wasn't out of baseball very long, so he was still trying to get his chops together there, I guess.
Right, so, yeah. Right. But if the Cubs lose every game, that's okay with me. You know,
I can't say I disagree. Even to this day, there are two teams I will not root for. One's in Major League Baseball and one's in the NFL, and that's the Chicago Cubs and the Dallas Cowboys. Sorry. I know Greg listens to this podcast, and Greg, my buddy, I'm sorry about that. I cannot root for the Dallas Cowboys no matter who they're playing. That's just because I was a St. Louis football Cardinal fan.
Or no matter which players they get, you still can't root for them.
No, can't do that. So when you worked at WTPR, I went on to other opportunities in central Louisiana is where I left to go to. And then we kind of lost touch a little bit until Facebook became a thing. How long were you at TPR?
I stayed there 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah, from 84 until 94.
Wow.
Which is when I left to go to the local newspaper in Paris. So,
Well, that's quite a long time.
Yeah, sometimes I dropped down to part-time status because I was going back to college a couple of times, but I never stopped working there. Actually, let me take that back. I did move out of town for a couple of years, but I stayed in radio during that time. I moved to Glasgow, Kentucky, and worked for a station there because one of the owners of WTPR decided he was going to move back to Glasgow, which was his hometown, and buy a station. And he offered a couple of us the opportunity to go up there and work. So I went up there and stayed a couple of years and then came back.
And what part of Paris. Kentucky is that in?
It's near Bowling Green in central Kentucky.
Yeah. UK
nice
fan?
Nice little area. Nice little area, but inundated with UK fans.
Yeah. And that's another team. Yeah, you can't.
That's another bad thing. Yeah,
it's another bad thing. And boy, when St. Peter's beat them, I was jumping up and down. Anyway, I know there's UK fans out there, but yeah.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Yeah. Then I'm going to ask you, because I don't find this very often in the news media, that you had to make that transition from being a radio news personality to becoming a news writer for a newspaper. Tell me about the differences and maybe some of the struggles you might have found making that transition from radio into the newspaper industry.
All right. Well, when I was coming out of college, I never thought that I would work for the Paris newspaper. I mean, my whole life growing up, that had been there. And when I was training for journalism, that had been there as like, you might wind up doing this sometime. And I never thought I would. want to work there, want to work there, right. or work there. And when I took the job, decided to take the job for financial reasons, I was immediately shocked by how much I enjoyed it. And I wound up writing stories, news, both news stories that we would call hard news, and the feature stories that are the softer, lighter stories. Found I was pretty good at writing both types, and found that I really enjoyed working there much more than I ever thought I would. Now, as far as differences, for one thing, in radio, you don't do a whole lot of feature stories. So you don't get to trust yourself to go off and write kind of colorful, or, you know, what I would say are soft, flowery stories, feel good stories about people. You don't get as many opportunities to do that in radio.
Right.
Writing long in newspapers. As far as the hard news, which I think is what you're comparing a little bit more there. Yeah, there's a big difference between writing, because when I was in news in radio, you have to get the headlines out there first.
Right.
Get it written quick, get it said quick. You might write a story that takes you an hour to complete and takes somebody 5 minutes to read if you write for the newspaper. And then you can take those same story, same facts, and write something for radio, and it'll take you, you know, 2 or 3 minutes to write. And they'll hear it in 30 seconds after you read it on the air. 30 seconds or less. So that's a big difference. You know, you got to realize what it's important in radio to realize what the crux of the story is right away, and get that out there. One of the best examples was when, and I know you remember this, I had been at the radio station in Paris for maybe 3 weeks when we had a tornado. A tornado came barreling into Paris, and I was still brand new virtually. And I had to go out in the middle of the afternoon and try to get some sound from the tornado and see what was going on. And we had, you know, massive rain blowing still, and the tornado had destroyed like a little strip of our main shopping area in town, including knocking down a grocery store, rubble everywhere. And I had to report on that right away back at the radio station. So that was a classic example of, hey, get the facts out there as fast as you can. What happened? You know, who got hurt, if anybody? How badly are they hurt? And what is the damage? And luckily, I was able to find the Paris police chief while I was at that store looking at the damage, and able to get together some information. But I was very inexperienced at the time. I hope I did okay. I think I did.
You did.
And
great.
There were actually nobody. There was nobody killed in that tornado. So
I remember there was at least one injury at a home where a roof collapsed. And what I remember from that day was that I think I was in your office and we were discussing something, probably joking around more than we should have. But I remember the AP machine going off, ding, 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 you know, as it does. And it was a weather alert, you know, for severe weather that was going to hit Henry County. Now, Henry County is in northern Tennessee, pretty close to the Kentucky border in northwest Tennessee. And I remember it didn't say anything about tornado warnings. It didn't say anything about a tornado alert or anything like that. It just called about severe weather. Well, I remember getting that torn off the AP machine, and I think you went and ran a copy of that, and you went to start writing stories and getting stuff, and it was my job to take it to the two radio stations we worked at, the FM and AM, and I walked back to the FM station, and I handed it to the announcer who was on the air. I was just, as I was handing it, my left hand goes out, and the lights go out.
really.
Yeah, and that building didn't have any windows, man, you know, back where the studios were.
You're right, oh, it didn't.
Man, yeah. It was dark. And
we were locked in there.
Yeah.
Those are the things you have to react to.
Yeah. And then you gotta throw.
This was pre-internet days, so at the newspaper, when we've had a couple of tornadoes in my time there, in the time pre-internet, we didn't have to worry about getting a story out anywhere for the newspaper. We were able to just go out, take a bunch of pictures, talk to people, and get it ready for the next day's paper.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's changed now because in modern times you have to almost treat your job at the newspaper like you're working for a radio station or a TV station.
That's that 24/7 news cycle.
Yeah,
get
the news out now. That's a huge difference from when I first went to work at the newspaper, because now we kind of are on call to get the news distributed to the readers right away.
Yeah, I remember when that tornado hit that we basically threw the format out the door.
And sure.
We were breaking in for news. I think you were calling in or you came in, and then you and I would talk because basically the announcers we had weren't experienced enough to be able to do an interview with you doing the news and then, you know, with me kind of pulling out other information from you of what you had seen and having that conversation, which was very, very important. But nowadays, with that 24-hour news cycle, and you got everything is on the phone, you got to put that on the website and on your app. You got to put it on there as fast as you can, and that's got to be a lot of pressure.
Our Facebook page.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it has changed a lot, we just made a decision at our newspaper. In fact, that has really gotten people stirred up. Here in Paris, for years and years and years, like my whole life.
That's years.
And before, this newspaper, by the way, has been in Paris since, I want to say, the early 1900s.
Wow.
And has always been, well, I don't know about always, but for my lifetime, they've always been a daily paper. For a while, when I was a kid, they were Monday through Saturday. They printed every day. The Saturday paper was phased out years ago, like 50 years ago. So we've been Monday through Friday every day for that whole time.
Right.
And the newspaper here just recently made a decision. In fact, this is the first week that we've gone to it. We've dropped two of the days. We're now printing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday only. And the readers and people are, you know, subscribers are understandably curious about that and what the future is going to be and that kind of thing. But it's just a matter of news. The newspaper industry has really been hurt by social media.
Yeah, big time.
And advertising is going elsewhere, and newspapers aren't able to sell advertising like they used to, so they've had to make cuts, and that's one of the cuts. And so this change to 3 days a week is going to affect us as the news department even more, because we're basically putting news out there on the days we don't have a paper now, which we never had to do before.
So are you doing that on an app or a website?
We put it on our website, and we put it on Facebook. I'm not sure. I don't believe we have an app. We go Facebook and we go with our own website.
Right.
And you know, we're going to have to adjust to it.
Yeah. And,
but,
and that's,
but we're not unique. We're not unique because the biggest metro paper to us, which is in Nashville, Tennessee, the Nashville Tennessean, they just announced that they're dropping their Saturday edition this week.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a thing that's affecting the whole industry.
Yeah. And I think it was during the pandemic in Salt Lake City, two big newspapers, the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News, they actually stopped printing and went to just online. I think they are now trying to start up, if they haven't already started up, doing a couple of days a week. And Salt Lake City is no longer a small little market. I mean, it's like number 38 in the country, and growing. So the face of the newspaper industry is changing so dramatically. The one thing that they did that I still question is they were asking for people to get subscriptions to their website. Does your paper do that, the PI?
Yeah, we do. We sell subscriptions to our website, and that allows them to read everything that we've got, including an e-edition that is pretty much a facsimile of the printed version of the paper.
Right.
Of course, what we throw in is the bonus is if you subscribe to the e-edition or if you subscribe to the print edition, you can get the e-edition for free.
All right.
That comes with the package. You know, younger people, I'm afraid it is a generational thing. Younger people don't seem to care as much about wanting to have a paper they can actually hold in their hand physically and look at it as the older people do. The older people still want to hold that paper and open it up in the morning, have their cup of coffee.
And see who died.
Yeah, and see who died. Absolutely. I don't know how many people have told me here that the first thing they do in our paper is go to page 3, which is where our death notices are printed every day.
Wow.
So,
well, you know, it's just the way things have changed in the news media altogether in the past. I don't even want to say 20 years. I'm saying the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. There's just been so many changes in the media. And I would say that that is pretty much one of the reasons why I'm no longer employed in the radio. But because of the changes and how radio stations have changed the way they're doing things. And I'm not going to get too involved in that. But, you know, you can listen to a radio station and you think that that guy is sitting right there in Paris, Tennessee. And that guy might be in Logan, Utah. You know, who knows? I know I did some weather forecasts for a company that would do weather forecasts for radio stations all over the country. And every morning I would get up and I'd do weather forecasts for Boston, Massachusetts. I would do weather forecasts for a couple places in Texas. I did weather forecasts for a station in the LA market. There was, I'm trying to remember where else, Montana, Alaska. I did several radio stations there. And every once in a while when I would fill in for somebody, I did weather for a radio station in Waverly, Tennessee that gets into the Paris, Tennessee market. And you probably know what I'm talking about there because I can't remember the name. But, yeah, they had a big sponsor of a restaurant there, and I'd always get a big kick because I'd always have to say, and in Paris the weather is, you know, and do that. But it was a heck of a lot of fun. And that's kind of the changes because –
it's fun, but those, how many of the listeners understand that that's someone that's not there anymore?
Right.
I think the radio stations that do that, they try to disguise it as best they can, they often are not successful at doing that. I would say that social media has affected newspapers adversely just as much or more as automation affected radio.
Correct.
That's kind of the big boogeyman that happened to local workers in newspapers was social media, has been social media, and the same thing in radio for automation and syndication or satellite services, I should say. The station that we're talking about on this podcast that you and I worked at together, WTPR, now in Paris. Excuse me. They get everything that goes on their air via satellite from Union City, Tennessee.
Right.
Because they are now owned by a station in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which owns a group of 8 to 10 stations, if by my understanding. Two of them are Union City in Paris, and they've decided that the Union City air personalities should be on the air in Paris.
Boy, that's
tough. So that's what they air in on the Paris stations when they're not airing national satellite programming.
Right.
which is what they have most of the time.
And it's so, all economics, you know. It's all
economics. It is economics, sure.
The state of advertising is not what it used to be.
Reflections.
We'll have more with Ken Walker about his career and life in radio and newspaper. We'll do that after we talk about the Helping Hands Radio Auction in Henry County, Tennessee. This is how radio can really help out a small community. A fascinating interview with the president of the Helping Hands organization in Henry County, Tennessee. That's next on Radio Guy Reflections. It's the world of professional wrestling. Hi, I'm Dave Dutton. I'm one of those lifelong fans. Christopher Evans joins me and Zane Peterson as we talk about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling from a little bit different perspective than a lot of the podcasts out there.
The following contest is scheduled for one fall.
We know what we like, and sometimes we talk about things we don't like.
You stupid idiots!
You might even find a chance to laugh at some of the things we do.
Who are you calling Rudy Tootie Booty?
It's Turnbuckle Trash. It's available on many of these same podcast channels. Join us. Turnbuckle Trash are also on Facebook and turnbuckletrash.net.
We're on the radio.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
We're always talking about radio.
Radio talk.
Even that's the stories that we're telling. That was when radio was strong.
Here is a complete disc jockey show with all the modern pace of today's exciting radio.
I mean, we are a bunch of weird people.
You seem to know what you're doing.
I'm waiting anxiously for what happens next.
This is Radio Guy Reflections. While growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, one of my favorite trips we took as a family was when our mother would load us up in the car and we'd take the road trip north to see my grandmother, my aunt and uncle, and my cousins who all lived in Paris, Tennessee. My family was always proud of their community, and I grew up hearing stories about two yearly events. First, the world's biggest fish fry, which takes place late in April every year. And the other event was always the Helping Hands Radio Auction on WTPR, a station I eventually worked at. My relatives were and still are very involved with the auction, whether it's through donating items or maybe making bids on some of these items. I was hired in the late 1970s as the news director at WTPR, and then in the 80s I came back as program director. So my roots are deep in Paris and Henry County, Tennessee. And since this podcast deals with WTPR in short, I started thinking about how unique the Helping Hands Radio Auction is. This organization, along with the help of the radio station, raises thousands of dollars each and every year that goes to different causes in communities and service organizations all over Henry County, Tennessee. And today I'm honored to talk with John Berryman, the president of the Helping Hands Radio Auction. And thanks for joining me today on Radio Guy Reflections, John. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, John, the Helping Hands Radio Auction, can we just get a little background here and kind of talk about around the time that the auction started off?
It started as a Helping Hand Radio Auction a little over 40 years ago. It had been the March of Dimes Radio Auction up to that point, but there were six men in the community that had worked with the March of Dimes auction, and they wanted to keep more of our fundraising proceeds at home in Henry County. So they developed a plan to create the Henry County Helping Hand. I don't know, the men that were involved were John Caldwell, Bill McCutcheon, Bill Davis, Bill Williams, William T. Looney, and Bob Jelks. And you probably know some of those.
Yeah, I know Bill McCutcheon. Bill McCutcheon was the one who hired me at WGPR.
Yeah, I know Bill. Yeah, I know Bill, too. He's the only one out of that group that I really personally know.
Yeah, well, tell Bill I said hi the next time you talk to him, and maybe I'll get him. Maybe I'll get him on the podcast. That would be interesting, too. But
yeah.
Great guy, so... So these six people came up with the idea, but something like this takes a long time to put together, especially when you're dealing with so many groups, so many communities, and so many service organizations. Let's talk that you just got through with an auction, and now
we did.
And you're probably already planning for next year, aren't you?
Yes, we've still got some housekeeping to do. We'll still need to distribute the funds from this year's auction, and we'll have two more meetings this year to settle up the auction proceeds and close out the books for 2022, and then we'll start working on next year's.
It's such a unique event in radio at WTPR that I've never heard of any. I've heard of the March and Dimes auctions, and then of course St. Jude does radio auctions all over the country. But nothing like what happens in Henry County, because this auction doesn't take place of one or two Saturdays or maybe for a week. It actually goes for, Ken told me, 2 months?
Yeah, eight full weeks.
Wow.
We started January 10th and finished up the first week of March. It was quite the event. We were really surprised at how well we did this year.
That's fantastic. So how many people are directly involved with your organization, the Helping Hands?
Gosh, there's dozens. Everybody's a volunteer. Mm-hmm. We have a 15-member board of directors who are elected in groups of five. Each person is from a different part of the county so that we can help ensure equal geographical representation throughout the county. And each board member serves a 3-year term. Mm-hmm. I'm rotating off the board this year, but I plan to continue to volunteer in other ways.
So how many different organizations are involved? I mean, I know you've got all the different little communities, Puryear, Buchanan, you've got Como, you've got all the different little communities in Henry County, and they all have their own day, do they not?
They do. We, you know, it takes a lot of experience and a lot of work to get those all organized. This year, we had 83 groups that had turned in applications for funding. But as far as groups that donate items, that each community, church, we have groups from school groups and other local charitable organizations, employee groups from local businesses and industries like our hospital, our public utility, the employees of Walmart, and lots of others. But as far as groups like that, we had approximately 160 different groups who got together to donate items for the auction.
Wow, that's incredible. I know since my cousins, Brenda Evans and also Kevin Bowie, and my sister, Judy Denton, all are involved in one way or the other. I think Brenda always does some wonderful baked goods, and Kevin's also does some good, he probably smokes some meats. You know, he's a very good cook, too. And my sister told me she helped out with answering the phones and helped Brenda with some of those baked goods. So you've got not only the organizations, but individuals.
There are many, many people that are involved in Helping Hand. I'd like to mention a few of them. Susan Bell has served as treasurer for Helping Hand for many, many years and does a ton of work to make sure that applications for funds are available and properly received. And she oversees the disbursement of funds and establishes a baseline based on how much each group has requested. She goes over the worthiness of the request and recommends to the board how much of our budget, how much of our funds that we've raised should go to each group. Mary Kate Ridgway has served as the board treasurer for probably an equal amount of time. She keeps the meeting minutes, and she kept me straight on my parliamentary procedure during board meetings this year, because that is not a strong suit of mine. We have many more volunteers who are essential to our success. Martha Stewart has been They're probably as long as Susan Mary Kate. She runs the office during the auction. She really keeps track of everything that's going on while the auction is happening. We have, you know, a group of five or six retired professionals who come in and take turns working in the office to help keep the sales receipts recorded and make sure that those totals balance with Martha's receipts. And this year we had seven volunteer auctioneers. And if I can, I'd like to name them. They're Andy Collins, Ray Compton, Noel Hatman, David Jackson, Jamie Orr, Junior Staggs, and Darren Thompson. They're all from different backgrounds. One's a banker. We've got a doctor. One of them, one of the seven, is actually a professional auctioneer. And we've got a financial advisor, a teacher and radio personality, an insurance agent, and a fellow from the local car dealership.
Wow.
That's just the auctioneers. We have to have a table, a panel that works with the auctioneer during each auction. And those panels are comprised of people from groups like the Lions Club, Kiwanis, Athena Delphian. They take turns answering the phones and recording the bids at the auctioneer's table. But, it takes a lot of people to make it happen. And Susan Hayes and Anita Wagner are two that organize the daily volunteers, the people that will take the items from people's cars and organize them into what we call a slate. So a table, a slate is a table of 10 items. We auction 10 items at a time. And so they'll organize and make sure that we've got all the volunteers we need to write descriptions of the items and organize the items and sort the items and put them in coolers if necessary. And it just takes a lot of people.
Wow. That's absolutely, you know, having helped with doing some of these things in Montgomery City, Missouri, and a little bit here in Cache Valley, it is not an easy thing to do. But, you know, they say a lot of hands make easy work, but it's not easy work. It makes it easier and not quite as hectic, because I know that's got to be unreal.
We're very fortunate to have so many people willing to volunteer their time. I'd say in the mornings we probably have at least 12 to 15 people working, writing up the tickets every morning, and you know, it takes I don't know. I didn't really put the number down, but I'd say we have 25 people a day volunteering.
Wow. So what time of the day do you do the auction on WTPR?
Well, the auction starts at 12:30 during the week and 12 o'clock on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And it runs until 5, or, you know, on light days when we don't have as many slates to sell, it'll end earlier. But we start accepting items at 7 in the morning. So we accept our donated items from 7 until 9. And then it takes a couple hours to get everything ready, get pictures made, uploaded onto Facebook. This was the first year that we attempted posting a picture of every auction item on Facebook.
Wow, that takes a little time too.
Yeah, and Kevin Bowie was a big part of that. He helped a lot. We wouldn't have been able to do that without him.
He's very involved in that community, as all of my relatives always were. My aunt and uncle, James Brent Bowie, and Aunt Chris Bowie, they were always involved in the community. And that's something I can say about Paris and Henry County, is the people that are there are involved in not only their high schools, but their churches and in their community service organizations. And when you said that the radio station, you know, donates the time from like 12 or 12:30 until 5 o'clock or maybe later.
Right.
But that radio station has a huge listenership during that time frame. Because I remember when I was there, you were always hearing the phones ring. You were always hearing the bids go up. And it was entertaining radio at that, too.
It is.
Very entertaining radio, and it just fascinates me. And I would like to just personally thank the people at WTPR for showing what a radio station was pretty much told to do back when they first started doing radio, was to serve the community. And I can't think of a better way to serve your community than what WTPR allows to happen on their airwaves each and every year. It's It's an incredible thing, John.
They're great. We really appreciate the time that they give us. We think it's mutually beneficial. They do get a lot of listeners during that time, and we couldn't do it without them.
It's that kind of publicity that you can't buy that kind of publicity. And since it's been going since the 70s, it's become just something that I think is very unique in the United States. I have never heard of an auction like this being so many days and lasting so long, but you guys, you do such good work that I think that's why the community has just embraced this. And you talked about those six men that got together, wanted to keep that money closer at hand. And those are the ones that set it up for you. Every time I talk to someone about this auction, and I've talked to several people on radio over the years about it, they're always amazed. So I wanted to ask you what type of items are auctioned off each and every year. I know you get a lot of baked goods and food items, maybe handicrafts. What kind of other auctions?
We've been called a really, really big bake sale, and the vast majority of our donated items are food items. We get homemade cakes and pies and cookies, and complete dinner baskets. An individual in one community this year donated 5 barbecue rib dinners, complete with salad, hash brown casserole, bread, another side item I can't remember. But those rib dinners, they generated very competitive bidding throughout the community. The people knew the man that donated them. They knew they were going to be really good. Each rib dinner brought between $400 and $500 a piece. So, we also have craft items donated. We have some men will build birdhouses. We had a church pew from a local church that was donated this year. Some men had cut it down to a manageable size that could be used in your home. I think it brought close to $800. There are charcuterie boards that are made home canned vegetables from our donors' gardens, homemade quilts, books, and puzzles. We get gift certificates from local businesses, jewelry made by local artisans, and we also get some pretty substantial monetary donations. This year we had one person with the Catholic Church who'd bequeathed a $25,000 donation to us. So that was really nice to think of us like that. The main items, though, are food items. I'd say food probably makes up 80 to 90% of all our donated items.
Oh, that's incredible. When you talked about those ribs, it made my mouth water a little bit, because there's nothing like West Tennessee ribs, I'll tell you that. So, John, we were talking about you had a church pew that was auctioned off this year, but there's got to be people that have donated very unusual items. What's an unusual item that you've seen go through?
Oh gosh, well, this is Tennessee, so we've had live chickens and other livestock. We've had actual manure to be used as fertilizer that was auctioned off. We've had a lot of other odd donations, but I got to tell you, the most unusual item is one that I didn't actually see. I wasn't volunteering that year, but it happened a few years ago, and it has become possibly the most legendary donation we've ever received.
Okay.
A local doctor donated a free vasectomy.
Snip, snip, snip.
It was comedy gold for our auctioneer on the radio that day, and it turned into literal gold for our charity.
That's fantastic.
We also received a certificate from an attorney for a free divorce. I'm not sure if those were donated the same year or if one was the result of the other, but we have had those two things.
That is priceless, John. That is so good. Oh, wow. So, well,
you never know. You never know what you're going to get with Helping Hand Radio Auction.
I'm trying to get my composure back here together. I are a professional radio guy. But John, so when you decide your committee gets together, where does that money go? Since you have a board of directors that is representing so many communities, who makes that final decision where this money goes?
Well, all the money is distributed to local nonprofit groups. When they apply, we request their 501c3 status and paperwork with their application. So we know that these groups fit into a category that includes something like community improvement, education, emergency funds. All our local volunteer fire departments request and receive money. We have groups that categories that basically health and safety, youth and senior citizen groups. And we're always asked, but we don't donate directly to individuals. That opens a Pandora's box that we don't want to get into. But we do donate to organizations who help individuals, like women's shelters and food banks.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that
the board will make the final decision. But Susan Bell does a lot of the work to determine worthiness and need.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, with the individuals, you would be opening up a can of worms. And so I fully support that. So let's talk about this year's auction. You went from January to March. And do you know what the final totals of the money raised this year alone?
This year alone, we raised $380,460.
That is incredible. Selling cakes and pies. That's the world's largest bake sale going along, the world's largest fish fry. So
that's right.
That is unreal. So was that a record for a year? Was it close to a record?
Yeah. We our 2020 auction finished just before the pandemic set in. And so we had a normal auction in 2020, and we beat the total from 2020 by a little more than $1,000, which was amazing because we really didn't think we'd be able to do it. When we scheduled our auction time, COVID numbers were fairly low, but about 2 weeks before the auction was to start, COVID numbers started to spike. And so we had to meet with our some representatives from our local medical community, and we made the decision as a board to forego our normal in-person auction, which generates a lot of bids. And instead, we only broadcast the auction over the radio. And that's what forced us into posting pictures of every auction item this year, which was something new for us. We'd never done, but it was crucial to get that done so that people could see what they're bidding on.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody had to make adjustments to anything they were doing during the pandemic. And I know Henry County was hit pretty hard. I think all of my relatives came down with COVID at one time or another. Knock on wood, I was lucky enough not to get it. So,
well, and the majority of our volunteers, our daily volunteers, are older, retired people, and some of them have compromised immune systems. And so we had to take every precaution we could to protect them.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree. So you're getting ready to do their final two meetings to distribute money, housekeeping, and then it's on to planning for the next year. How many times do you meet between now and, say, December when the holidays take over? So
we'll only meet a couple of times in April, and then we'll meet again in October to get things started for the next auction. Some work will be done in the meantime by especially by Susan Bell and Mary Kate Ridgway, who and some of the people who organize the volunteers will start making calls. But that's when we really start in earnest, is in October. And we'll have a final board meeting in December to make sure that we've got everything that we need done, and it gives us about a month to fill in the gaps and clean up anything that needs to be done.
Well, John, it's a fascinating situation you have, and I think a very unique situation that involves a radio station, and that's what this podcast is about, radio, but it involves a radio station doing something to really serve their community. And over the years, you said, I think it's 40 years now, over 40 years, literally, right. Probably, well, millions of dollars have been raised over the years.
I had the number. I should have had that ready for you, but it's been several million dollars since 1978.
And it stays right there in that community. And that's That's the thing.
Right
that
here.
Just, it's unreal. It's just unreal.
Every dollar goes to benefit someone from our community, and I don't know what I'm trying to say. The
service organizations.
Into it. It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Well, Paris and Henry County is a beautiful part of the country. I used to play golf quite a bit down at Paris Landing, and it was the best golf course I have ever been on. I'm telling you, I just thought that was a beautiful course. And my heart has always been a part of Paris and Henry County, even though I live in Logan, Utah now. And I am just so impressed that this Helping Hands Radio Auction is doing such wonderful work for their community. And John, I thank you so much for joining us on Radio Guy Reflections.
Well, thanks for having me.
We'll have more with an interview with Kim Walker in Paris, Tennessee. And yes, they do have a replica of the Eiffel Tower, and they also host the world's biggest fish fry. We'll find out more about Kim Walker next here on Turnbuckle Trash. Hi, this is Dave Denton. Let my voice go to work for you. It's davesvoiceworks.com. Spell works, W-O-R-X. And you can hear samples of my on-air work and also some of the commercials I've done over the years. There's pictures from some of my career and more, all at davesvoiceworks.com. davesvoiceworks.com, spell works, W-O-R-X. This is Radio Guy Reflections.
Too many people in this business who think that they're, I guess it's a podcast, their stuff doesn't stink. You know, it's just like, hey, look, we're all just enjoying the game. We're all just having a good time. Sports are supposed to be fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Let's go have a good time and really paint a great picture for the fans out there.
I wanted to be me. I didn't want to put on a show. I wanted to, obviously, a show, but I didn't want to be fake on the air. What you get is what you get.
You know, that would be a fascinating career. I want to witness history in a way and see it and tell the compelling stories of it.
When did you find out he is autistic?
When you get that diagnosis, it's not necessarily a shock to you, but it's validating how you've been feeling.
I can't imagine what the future of talk radio could have been or would have been had Rush not come along when he did.
This is Radio Guy Reflections. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Helping Hands Radio Auction, which has been a mainstay in Paris, Tennessee since the 70s, where the radio station, WTPR-AM, just donates their airtime for this organization to auction off items to raise money that is used right there in Henry County. I've always been fascinated by that, and I hope I can make it part of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's an event that I've never seen anything quite like it any other place.
Yeah, me too.
In any other community. It works here, I guess, mainly because the people who run it have done such a great job with it. You wouldn't believe the amount of interest, though. And it's been going on since the early 70s, and the amount of money raised each year has been tremendous and always on the uptick. And, you know, people donate things from all across the community, mostly baked goods, but other things as well. I wondered for years, why is somebody bidding $50 to get that pie? Uh-huh. But they do it for the good of the community. They donate, you know, it's an auction, and people donate way overpay for items, but the money is going to a great cause. It's because they have this whole list of nonprofits that they donate the money to.
And if it's made by my cousin Brenda, it's worth $50.
Brenda makes a lot of the baked goods.
Yeah,
I'm
she
sure.
does. She really does. And Kevin always smokes some meat and stuff like that.
They're typical of the people that get involved in that. It's really a big success here in this town. And like I said, lots of other communities have sent people here to try and study it.
Mm-hmm.
And see what works for it and go back to their towns so that they can do something like it. And I don't know that it's ever worked in
no.
other places.
I've tried to get it started in a couple of places I worked at, and it was hard for us to get maybe 2 or 3 hours of programming in. I don't know if they still do it weeks at a time, But yeah, it's in Paris and Henry County, it's an event, and I take my hats off to the organization and also to the ownership of WTPR, even the new ownership that allows them to keep on doing that, because that is serving your community.
You think about it, one of the original goals of broadcast mediums, radio and everything, was to serve the public.
Exactly.
Community service. In fact, there's community service requirements, I guess, still in radio, isn't there?
Yep.
And that does it more than anything I've ever seen. That they're doing it strictly to serve the community, and it's just a great thing here. And it goes on for 2 months every year.
Wow, I didn't know it was that long. Wow.
Yeah, every weekday and some Saturdays too. For 2 months, and I don't want to quote a dollar figure for what they raised this year because I don't remember it in my mind right now, but they broke the record again this year.
Doesn't surprise me. But I was going to ask you about your Facebook page. Do you allow people to make comments on your Facebook page, and are people responsible with what kind of comments they're making on your news stories?
On our news stories, we do allow comments on our Facebook page. We do have someone, it's our publisher, actually, the head person, who supposedly goes in there every morning and checks those comments, and if there's anything out of line or what he deems to be untrue or, you know, maybe particularly bad language or anything like that, then he has the ability to remove those if he thinks that they're... Now, I don't think he has to remove very many.
Well, good.
Most people are okay, but they'll be nasty. They'll have snarky comments, and usually we leave them on there if they're not terrible, really bad about some other person or...
Yeah, you don't want to get into slander.
Most of the time, if they're, you know, if they're critical of the newspaper, we don't care. We'll just leave it on there.
Right.
But if it's critical of an individual person in the community or something, we might take that off. I don't know. That's up to him. But I think it's a good thing to let people comment on the stories. You have to get feedback from the community, or you don't know what they're thinking about things.
So. Yeah. But the one problem I have with what goes on social media is it gets so cruel sometimes.
It does.
And so nitpicky, and not allowing someone else to have a different opinion than what your opinion would be. I try to respect everyone's opinion. I honestly do, because, you know, they have different life experiences than I do. And I just wish they could see that my life experience might make me look at a certain news angle and be upset by the way it was reported because of my life experience as opposed to their life experience, which they might be fine with it. So mm-hmm. I never try to respond to a comment, very, very rarely. If I make a comment and somebody doesn't like it, I just usually say, hey, more power to you. I don't care.
Well,
you know, that's just,
I guess what bothers me is a lot of those, cruel comments are like knee-jerk reactions. I wish people would not jump on their keyboard immediately when they have a knee-jerk reaction to some story,
right?
And start typing right away. I wish they would think about it for a little bit before they did that.
Yeah, that keyboard courage, isn't it?
Yeah, probably one of the worst examples we've had, or I don't know if worst is the word, but extreme examples we've had. Probably 2 years ago, I would guess. I don't know. Your listeners probably don't know that Hank Williams Jr., the country music superstar, lives in our county here that Paris is located in. And unfortunately, a couple of years ago, one of his daughters was killed in a traffic accident. Here. Her name was Katie Williams. She was a terrible thing. Mid-20s and died in a traffic accident. Being a newspaper, we of course reported this and had somebody take a photo of the crash scene. And when that went on the internet, boy, you would think we had turned into the devil himself. You shouldn't be printing these things about poor Katie. And boy, Hank Jr. is not going to like that you're putting this stuff in here about Katie. And I'm thinking, well, what are we supposed to do? We're a newspaper, and she was famous.
Right.
At least in the community, she was famous. And nationwide, she was famous because she was Hank's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody in the nation reported on it eventually. We were the first ones to have the story just because of our proximity to it happening. And boy, you would have thought we were just awful because we reported that she got killed in a traffic accident.
Well, that brings up a question. As you were talking about that, I thought about this when I was talking with Art Rascone, and Art recently retired as a TV news anchor in Houston, Texas at ABC, the ABC affiliate there. And I had known Art for several years. I actually had worked with him in Rexburg, Idaho, and gave him his first job in radio. And we talked about how, as a news person, how difficult it is sometimes to go up to someone who's having probably their worst day of their life and in such an emotional state, how difficult it is as a news person to come up with that question that is respectful, but also getting that information. And what you might think is respectful, somebody else as reading that article or listening to a newscast doesn't find it as respectful as you meant it to be. And that's got to be really tough, especially in your industry and newspaper.
It is difficult. Luckily, in newspapers, we can interview those people or ask them questions away from the public. We write the responses later. What's really the people that are in a bad spot there are TV or radio reporters that are live or something like that.
Right.
You know, they're in a really tough spot. But I've certainly had situations where I've had to ask people things I didn't want to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a guy, just as a human being, I didn't want to ask them. But you do your job.
Yeah, and I know you are a very caring person from our time of working together at WTPR AM and FM, and you were always very kind to anybody that was around. And I think it comes from your upbringing, you know, when especially in that part of the South, you were taught to be respectful when you were growing up, at least when we were growing up, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You said yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, or you got a little slappy, you know?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So, go ahead.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I mean, this may not be relevant to newspapers or our discussion right now, but, boy, you see a difference in generations, don't you?
Yeah.
The younger kids now, you wonder sometimes what kind of upbringing they're getting, but... I mean, certainly that doesn't apply to everybody. I know there are good parents out there that are working now, working real hard to bring their kids up right. But
you see
some of the results these days, and you wonder.
Now, I'm going to tell you this, and I don't know if I put it on my Facebook page. I just can't remember. But I thought of you when I saw this last week. I think I was... We found a TV show that I think it was on the ID network that had to do with private investigators. And this show featured Henry County and a murder of missing woman who is missing from the Como area. Those kind of stories are very, very difficult to report on because of all the rumors that go around. And as I was watching this private investigator being followed around by a news crew, I could just imagine. I don't know if you followed that story or not, if you know what I'm talking about, but I thought of you having to be out there and asking the questions of the family and maybe of the sheriff's department or the investigators and trying to find out what. And at that point, I know it's like, what can we do to assist in finding this person alive or finding their remains? I know that's got to be really tough.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times in that regard, we follow the lead of the law enforcement departments. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they'll tell us, we have such good relationships in a town this size, we have good relationships with those people. And
right.
They'll reach out to us and try to get us to help out in a certain way, and we'll try to do that. But in cases similar to the one you're talking about, I mean, we have a lot of experience here. And by we, I mean me, have a lot of experience dealing with family members of people that have been involved in things, whether it's been a death, maybe it's a family member of the person who was killed, or a disappearance like you're talking about. It's a family member or a victim of a crime. The family members all come around and they all want you to write the story from their point of view. That's the tough part about things like that. They don't understand that we have to go then ask other people, you know, what they think happened on something. You know, they want it all out there from their side, but they don't necessarily like it when we go and put information in from the other side.
And that's where the important part is quoting your sources, isn't it?
Yeah, I hear that. We had a death here a few months back. There was a kid who was a mentally handicapped, mentally challenged kid who was attending a vocational school here. He died, unfortunately, when he got he was riding in the back of a pickup truck at the vocational school. School had just ended. And some of the boys from the school were riding over somewhere to do something. And this individual was in the back of the pickup truck. And apparently the driver of the truck slammed the brakes on real quick. Kind of like, you know, boys roughhousing kind of thing. Well, I'm sure you did it when you were a kid, you know, drive down the road and just do all kind of stupid stuff. And the mentally challenged boy fell out the back of the truck and died. Hit his head and died. And that's been kind of a weird story here because it never got into the crime reports here because it wasn't considered a crime by the people involved and the officers involved. They weren't called to the scene. They only found out about it when the boy who was killed, his family got involved from another county because he lived in another county. And then the family started calling other media, calling media too, including us. And it's just been a big mess. They finally wound up charging one of the other boys with a crime. But that's a typical situation. The family of the deceased is... would really like us to write more about how bad, how evil that was that those boys did that, you know, and we have to, we kind of have adopted the philosophy that we have to wait and see what happens in court and things like that. And, you know,
well, you know, a personal,
it's just tough.
A personal affront to this is just me personally. I find it, and I've always found it difficult to name someone who was being charged with a very bad crime that could affect the rest of their lives if they didn't do it. And you know, let's just say it was a sexual abuse case, and you know, and not saying, and it's a terrible thing. And man, I tell you what, there's nothing that gets my goat than when I had to do news, and I did news in Paris. In Missouri and also a little bit here in Utah. But nothing gets my goat when I hear something like that. But every once in a while you hear of somebody who's accused and for some reason or another, they weren't the ones to do it. But how it affects their lives is always something I struggle with. There was a teacher in a community just north of Salt Lake City where he was accused of doing some very bad things with some of his students. And then the students reneged about 6 months later and his life has never been the same. He can't get a teaching job. He, you know, and that's the kind of thing that I just would prefer to try not to say who it was. And I know a lot of people are in there taught that they got to name names, but man, it just, it's really hard for me to say that. I don't know what you feel about that.
And that's another thing that social media is affecting too now in a negative way, because the stories that were written about this fella are still on the internet.
Yeah.
They're going to be out there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who searches this guy's name now might find the stories where he was accused and never find the story back in the old files of where he was exonerated.
Yeah.
Why I stand by my statement that I tell people all the time. The greatest invention in our society over the last 200 years has been the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst invention in our society over the last 200 years has been the internet.
Agreed. Let me just throw in a little personal story here, okay? Now, this one's personal. Several years ago, the radio stations I worked with came up with a news site called CacheValleyDaily.com. And there was a very serious news story that happened just north of where I live in another small community. But the person who was arrested and charged with a very serious crime, his name was David Denton. And there were people contacting CacheValleyDaily.com saying, oh, yeah, he's the morning guy on Cool 103.9. Well, I was freaking out, you know, thinking my friends are going to see this, and I know I didn't do it, but he shared my name, and they actually rewrote the story and put in there, this in no connection is with the Dave Denton on Cool 103.9, which I greatly appreciated. Thank you, Will, by the way. But that's why I have problems with names and stuff. So,
well, even in our smallish community here, that happens because we have people with the same name.
Right.
Actually, there was another David Denton in Paris when you were here.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was.
And he owns a restaurant. He owns a restaurant here now.
He's got to be a relative. I mean, that's new with food. Dave's all right. That's awesome. I like that.
Well, the way our paper has always dealt with that is that we've always tried to put the accused person's age and address
right
in the paper. And if the other person who has that name is well known enough in the community,
mm-hmm.
we have been known to put in a statement like you talked about. This is not the same so-and-so John Smith who lived or works at Commercial Bank or something like that.
That's good to hear.
Unfortunately, the Tennessee legislature has made that harder for us now because they've sent down a state law that has tightened up the crime reports. So when we get a crime report now, they don't give us the age and address on people.
Whoa.
They do give us the age still. They don't let us use the address anymore on people who are arrested.
Wow.
And that affects us. We have a Republican controlled majority here, and they decided that was something that they wanted to do. And now we can't report somebody who's arrested. We can't report their address.
Whoa.
So
it's scary times that we live in. So Ken, I wanted to go back to when you and I were working together. We're both big music fans, both big sports fans. And I think that's why we got along so well, but we also worked with some very good people. I think you told me that she had passed away. We had Paula, who was working with me in the office. She
was
so good.
Director.
Yeah, she was so good at her job, and she took a lot of ribbing from you and I, but boy, she gave it back. I thought the world of the people that I worked with at WPTPR, especially most of them. And any place you work, there's always one or two that you go, I don't want to see them anymore. But I wanted to get that in there. And then I thought of you several years ago when the radio station I was working at was switching from country music to an oldies format. This was in 2002. So it was a long time ago. So I'm doing my research and trying to find the songs. And I came across a list of instrumentals. And you and I, because the song of Am I the Same Girl by the Swing Out Sisters, we kept on saying, well, who? I know that tune. Why do I know that? And while I was checking out this instrumental, I found it was Soulful Strut.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought, and it, boy, if we'd have been connected at that point, I know I was going, that's the song that we, I know we
walked around for, I remember walking around for months trying to figure out what that song was. I didn't have it pinned down as Soulful Strut, but I had the song in my mind. And nobody could, lots of people told me what their guess, I would hum it for them very poorly, mm-hmm. I'm sure,
too.
None of them actually could figure out and tell me that that was Soulful Strut by Young Holt Unlimited.
Yes,
and it's a terrific instrumental. And I finally found out what it was, and I've got a copy of it now, so everything's all good.
Yeah, me too, so... But I just wanted to let you know that I have thought about you throughout the years, off and on, because we did have a good time.
I got to say that I'm consider myself pretty knowledgeable about oldies, mm-hmm. and you're somebody I aspire to reach in terms of knowledge of the oldies. You wouldn't believe how much I've studied all these old songs just so I can try to keep up with you.
Well, you know, at the radio station I worked at when the radio station, the country station, was bought and took over by the Cash Valley Media Group, they brought me over, and I was still doing country for a while until we made the switch. Then they asked me if I wanted to be on the classic rock station in the afternoon. And I can't even remember who the program director was because he left shortly thereafter. But all the time, he would be coming and asking me about rock and roll questions, oldies questions and stuff. And, of course, being in the business since 1974 and being a big music fan before that, I knew a lot of the trivia. And one day he says, you are like a PhD of rock and roll. We're going to start calling you Dr. Dave. So for years in Cache Valley, I was Dr. Dave, the Doctor of Rock.
There you go.
Yeah, and I'd go the one and only, the original, who else would claim to be but me, the Doctor of Rock. And I'd always have to explain to people that I met, well, I said, where did you come up with that name of Dr. Dave? I said, it wasn't one I gave myself because...
Are you really a doctor?
Yeah, are you really? And I said, yeah. Yes, I am a doctor, but I did play one on the radio, you know, so... Yeah. But
well, listen, Dave, I've got to give you a compliment.
Okay,
one thing I've always admired. I wasn't going to say this, but it's true. You were probably the best morning DJ that ever... came along in this town.
Oh, thank you, man.
You were very professional. I remember one of our city police officers used to tell me when I was going around on my crime rounds how good he thought you were. And he later became police chief.
Oh, good.
And he's still living here. He's retired now, but I still see him a lot. And he thought you were really good, and he liked our morning show.
Well, I thought it was a very good morning show.
Now, the compliment I was going to give you was that I know that you... I don't know that I've ever seen anybody love their career more than you.
Oh, thank you. I do.
You clearly knew from an early age that you wanted to be in radio, and by golly, you were going to be in radio, and you were going to be good at radio, and you were going to stay in radio for your whole life.
And I did.
And you did it. So
it was a great career. Hey,
many people get to realize that and are able to make that happen, but you did what you wanted to do.
So. And I consider myself blessed that way because I've, like Rush Limbaugh used to say, and I don't know if you're a Rush fan, talent on loan from God. And it was more of, he was saying that as more of a joke, but I do believe that I was given a God-given talent, and it helped me support myself over the years and led to me coming to Utah, meeting my wife, my first full day here in Utah. Through all the heartaches and through all the...
Wait. You met her your first full day in Utah?
Yes, I left Missouri because I was a part owner of a radio station right outside of St. Louis in mid-Missouri. And I left there and moved to Salt Lake City where my sister was. And I came to visit on my first full day to Logan, Utah, where my old college roommate was. And he was going to let me drop off some of my stuff and store it there. And his wife... called up Teresa and said, come over the next day. Well, it was like 8:30 when she called her, you know, and she came over the next day, met that afternoon, And by Thanksgiving, that was in June.
I'm pretty sure Michael Landon was there.
You know,
Highway to Heaven era. Yeah, that must have been what set that up.
It was really cool because I was to the point where I didn't think I would ever find anybody. And she's been absolutely wonderful. I've put her through you know what with health concerns and then losing my job last year and all that. She's been nothing but supportive, and I always sing her praises, so I'm singing her praises right now, and my life would not be near as good as it is right now without my wife. I really do believe that, man.
That's great.
Yeah. So what's in the future for Ken Walker? I mean, you're getting to that age where you're maybe starting to think about retirement, or is that something you've thought about?
Yes. Well, I mean, I feel so good and still basically enjoy working.
I hear that.
I do enjoy my time off, but I basically enjoy working and still, and you know, I guess I'm eyeing maybe retiring in my late 60s. And see how things go between now and then. We've got a lot of people at the newspaper that I work at who are all in the same age range.
Right.
So we've got several approaching that age where they're going to start thinking about it. And I'm one of them, but I'll have to make a decision for myself. But
in my case, it was the decision was taken away from me, you know, to be honest with you. But I would work in radio if somebody offered me a job right now and I could do it from home, like we had talked about on the internet and all that. I would still be doing it because that's how much I love what I do. But I also tell people, work as long as you want to. You know, there are people that work into their 80s because they enjoy their work. And, you know, as long as you can have a good life, and as long as you enjoy what you're doing, I say go for it. And the way the economy's going, maybe you have to work into your 80s. But I won't say anything else about that, you know.
Well, no, I still enjoy it for the most part. One thing this job has done is allowed me to – I've never been the most outgoing person. And this job has allowed me to meet a lot of people here in town. So that's one thing I enjoy about it, and I want to keep doing that. And met a lot of good people that way.
Yes, you have. And there are a lot of good people in Paris, Tennessee, and Henry County. Well, Ken, I wanted to thank you once again for joining us on Radio Guy Reflections. And I just can't tell you how much I enjoyed reminiscing with you and talking to you and talking about your career and going from radio into newspaper. We've had one other interview like this where a lady I worked with in mid-Missouri named Helen Davis went in from radio into newspaper, but hers wasn't as much reporting as what you've done over the years. And I've found it fascinating. You're a very talented writer. I know that. And I know that our friendship has meant a lot to me over the years.
All right. Well, I appreciate being on, Dave.
And go Racers, right?
Go Racers.
Well, you take care.
They got deprived of their chance to beat Kentucky because Kentucky lost. If Kentucky had won its game, it was going to be a Murray State versus Kentucky matchup. Oh. So the joke here already is Kentucky will do anything to not play Murray.
Oh, I would have watched that one for sure. So, and that's Radio Guy Reflections, a podcast about radio and the people behind the microphone. In future podcasts, we'll look at what makes a successful and sometimes a train wreck of a radio show.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
We'll talk with people who started in radio and moved on to success in other fields. Radio Guy Reflections. We'll be back soon with another show about radio and the men and women who produce the radio programs you've loved to listen to. Radio Guy Reflections is a production of Dave's Voice Works.